Good morning and welcome to Jump In Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and you're here for the engagement hour. Why the engagement hour? Is the purpose of this show is to try to get you involved, or at least let you know how you can get involved. There's a lot of responsibilities we have as citizens in this country, and one of them is to be informed and to be engaged. And today, we are going to focus on education. I'm very honored and glad to have Dr. Gabe Trujillo with me, the superintendent of Tucson Unified, as well as Michelle Watson, the CEO and senior vice president of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, who also runs that organization's P20 group focus area. So we'll be talking about some education today, specifically around TUSD and the legislature and some of the things that we have going on. But first, I want to quick introduction for both of them. Both are actually Arizona natives. They both grew up here. Dr. Trujillo grew up in is a graduate of the Peoria Unified School District, and Shelly Watson is a graduate of the Amphi School District. They both attended universities here in Arizona. We might not talk about those quite as much because it was about 90 miles north of here, but they've both got a long experience of what I call service. We've talked a lot about getting engaged in community and civic engagement, and a lot of times that is in the field of education. There's no doubt, I think everybody would say that our teachers and our first responders and our firefighters and our military service are all part of public service because they are giving back. And quite often, maybe not for as much as they should be receiving for those duties. But Dr. Trujillo has been a public educator, school educator for over 25 years as both a teacher, assistant principal, and as a human resource director. Prior to his appointment as the superintendent of TUSD, he's currently in his sixth year of service to the Tucson Unified community. He's the leader of Southern Arizona's largest school system and the state's third largest public school district. I always thought it was the second, so you're going to have to inform me on who's passed TUSD up. But Dr. Trujillo serves over 40,000 students and families, oversees the supports of 89 schools and programs, and he proudly serves almost 8,000 employees. Dr. Trujillo, thank you for being here with us today.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Shelly Watson came on to SALC in 2017. Prior to that, she was the CEO of a national fundraising consulting firm where she managed a team of consultants and nonprofits from across the country. Shelly currently serves on several boards of interest, particularly with today's conversation. She serves on the Education Forward Arizona Board, a statewide organization focused on improving the education systems throughout Arizona. Tucson values teachers. She's the board president of Sister Jose's Women's Center and is the past board president of the Ronald McDonald House Charities of Southern Arizona. So thank you, Shelly, for joining us as well today.
Thanks, Ted. Glad to be here.
So just so you both know, this is the first time I've had two guests on at the same time. So here we go. It's a good thing we've got Matt Neely on the other side of the glasses. He will continue to make sure we stay on time and on task and like to roll forward. Normally at this point, I like to ask everybody, you know, all my guests, what it was that got them involved in public service. However, you both have a long litany of examples of being involved. So we'll get to that towards the end, particularly when it comes to kind of putting some advice out to maybe our listeners on how they can get involved first. Therefore, I want to jump right into the issues. And the first one is going to be, Dr. Trujillo, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the bond passage. It's been a long time since TUSD's had a bond. So how did this come about and why do you think it was successful?
Well, number one, I think it was successful. We have to give credit to the people behind the effort. We had some incredibly passionate people that represent a beautiful cross-section of the TUSD community in the greater Tucson area, coming together for a common vision, the vision of passing the first comprehensive bond package in over a generation. And I think two things persuaded the electorate to support the effort. I think number one, it's no secret that regardless of where a person is politically on the political spectrum here in Arizona, numerous polling data have shown that education is a primary concern of the average everyday Arizona citizen, particularly the funding behind education as well as the safety and security of schools. So I think that has been on voters' minds for quite some time, and not a partisan issue. it's a parent issue. It's a community member issue. Also understanding that education and the quality of the education in a particular city is inextricably linked to the health of the local economy. I think secondly, TUSD, the district, has done an incredible job over the last 7 or 8 years of sort of reshaping the narrative around the district, a district that is now focused less on external politics and external political issues, and the core education of children. The focus now being reading, writing, and math, and the focus being being the preeminent educational choice for the people of Pima County. I think that has also gone a long way in the hearts and to win over the hearts and minds of the voters.
Absolutely, Dr. Trio, you've been a great leader in trying to get that focus back to the education of the children. And we've got some other issues we'll talk about later that impact that. Shelley, the Southern Arizona Leadership Council took a position of support to these bonds. Can you kind of talk about why and what you see the benefit of going forward with these bonds in the future?
Sure. I think that, you know, our members as well as voters in the region understand that as goes TUSD, you know, the largest district in our region, so goes our region for in a lot of ways. And whether you live in the district or not, you know, many of us work in the district, we shop in the district and so forth. TUSD's success is important. It is a bellwether for the region. And so I think that resonated with our members and with voters in the region. And I think, as Dr. Trujillo rightly said, there is an understanding and appreciation that we do need to invest in our districts and in education broadly in Arizona. We, you know, depending on what list you look at, we're at the bottom in many categories, including per pupil funding. And I think people are just sort of tired of that narrative. They'd like to see something different. And I think that's why our members decided to step up and support this bond. And as you probably noticed, a lot of the bonds throughout the state were successful as well. So I think there's just sort of a groundswell of support broadly for education among voters.
Well, that's a great point. There was definitely a groundswell of support. And so often we forget that one of the largest investments or one of the larger investments in our children's education is achieved locally. And you can see that's where the greatest disparity between schools quite often is as well. And so I think that was one of the reasons it was important for the bonds to get through. So Dr. Trujillo, now that the bonds have passed, now what's next in how this event will lead to better education inside TUSD?
No, that's a great question. So number one, we want to honor a commitment to the voters of total and complete transparency. So one of the first actions the governing board took in its December governing board meeting was they approved of the formation of a governing board appointed committee, a bond oversight committee comprised of the electorate, of the community. That will be a combination of hopefully parents, members of the business community, residents of our great TUSD community, even employees coming together to make crucial decisions along the way as we implement this bond package. So that's next, and we are soliciting. We are accepting applications now. You can hit up our website. We're hoping to bring forward a slate of names for governing board consideration and approval at the end of the month, if not the first governing board meeting in March. The second thing that we're working on is the first slate of projects, and we're planning for the first phase implementation of projects. We call these Category 1 projects. They're projects of urgency. So obviously at the front of the line is going to be heating and cooling systems, HVAC towers, getting our heating and cooling systems either replaced or overhauled in every single school where they're a concern. That's a Priority 1 project. And then all of our safety and security infrastructure also going to the front of the line. In terms of gating and fencing and cameras, parking lot lighting, those are going to be at the front of the line. And then a lot of the major electrical and plumbing system work that has been problematic in our schools. We're going to see these projects go first, obviously because of their urgency. So the exciting thing is that our next governing board meeting coming up, the board will be taking the formal action of approving the first round of bond sales. So we will authorize the sale of bonds coming up here at our governing board meeting.
Well, the focus behind the bond campaign itself was about a large part about safety and improving the campuses throughout throughout the district. So I think the fact that you've got the Cat 1 projects out there is the direction you should go. Real quick, the oversight committee, you're not just looking for cheerleaders. You're looking for a lot of diverse, different folks that you want on that committee. So what are some of the examples of things that maybe you're a little concerned about not getting on the committee from backgrounds, whether it's financial, whether it's construction? What kind of volunteers are you hoping will be on that committee?
Well, we're looking for people that have a variety of backgrounds, but what would be predominantly, what we would love to see predominantly represented on the oversight committee is people from the field of finance. It doesn't have to be school finance, but an accounting background, a public finance background would be great. People who have experience working within civic institutions, like either for a city government, a county government, doesn't have to be a school system. We would like to see higher ed represented in some way, whether from the Pima Community College community or the University of Arizona. We would love to see parents. Okay, so if you don't have that background, we would love to see parents that are also represented. And then ideally, we'd like to see people with some type of experience with procurement. The Bond Oversight Committee is going to be making million-dollar recommendations and dealing with vendors and assessing the quality of different vendors. We'd love to see some folks with some kind of working knowledge of procurement. So those would be our preferences. And then ideally, maybe former governing board members that have experience and understand what it is to be in that arena and what goes into that work. And just taking a look at some of the applicants that have come in, it looks like we've got some folks, you know, who have served in other states and are kind of here as retirees that might have that experience.
Well, that's great news. And look at that. We're only 15 minutes in. I've got a couple different opportunities for people to get involved. So I'm with Dr. Gabe Trujillo, TUSD Superintendent, and Shelley Watson with the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. And you're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030, The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson, The Engagement Hour. I'm Ted Maxwell, and with me is Dr. Gabe Trujillo, TUSD Superintendent, and Shelley Watson, the CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. Not surprisingly, we start talking TUSD and education in the region, we've got a caller. So I'd like to go at this time to Carlos Ruiz, and I understand you have a question, Carlos.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I have a question about the Tier 1 spending on every single school in the district when some of these schools are dramatically underutilized. Maybe a school with 120 students that was built for 700 or 400 students for a school that was built for 2,500. I'm trying to square that that kind of spending.
All right. Thank you for your call, Dr. Trujillo.
So, yeah, let me clarify. So that's a great question. Not every school in the district is going to get a brand new HVAC tower, right? So there are categories of severity in which we have HVAC issues. Obviously, we have a frontline list of schools that do need a brand new HVAC tower, like Sabino, who's getting theirs in the next couple of weeks, where it is literally not functional. Then you have another list of schools where you have HVAC systems on their last legs and they need major overhaul and repair. And then you've got some newer facilities like Wakefield that are going to be fine, or Innovation Tech. So it's kind of a tiered list. Now, getting to Carlos' point, I can't speak for future boards. I can't speak even for this board. But somewhere down the line, there could be a board coming in making the decision to sell some of our vacant properties, or even making decisions about the current slate of TUSD schools that we have. Any work that we put into those properties now is going to add to the resale value going forward in the future. So I do want to assuage the taxpayers that it's not ultimately going to be money lost.
Absolutely. And Dr. Trejo, I know we've talked about it before, that the idea of good use of the facilities we have has been top of your mind for a long time. So it's going to, that's something that over the life of these bonds is going to be addressed. There may be changes, but that's part of having that oversight committee to help guide you through that. So I appreciate the call, Carlos, and I appreciate your answer. One thing I want to get to before we get to the bottom of the hour is I think one of the things that played into the success of this bond was the action and the work you'd put into getting out from under the DSEG order. We were under that order for almost 40 plus years. Can you kind of give us an update on where that stands right now? I know the last board meeting was a little controversial. And then if you could just, before we hit that bottom of the hour, give us your ideas of what the path forward with that issue and what changing environment may and may not look like.
Yeah, the current status of the desegregation case is we are at the Ninth Circuit. Oral arguments were facilitated in December in San Francisco. So those were in person. And I think our attorneys did an absolutely wonderful job representing the district. And now we're waiting for a decision coming out of the Ninth Circuit, which could come any time at this point. We are expecting a decision within actually the next 4 to 6 weeks. What does that mean? If we are victorious in the Ninth Circuit, then it can truly be said that the desegregation case is pretty much 100% behind the Tucson Unified School District. The plaintiffs would have to appeal to the Supreme Court. And when you look at the Supreme Court's record of taking these kinds of cases, that is going to be almost impossible, them just even hearing the case. Then even if they decide to hear the case, the probability of victory becomes very, very slim. And it truly means that the governing board would be free to make the kinds of decisions that I think it needs to make with regard to desegregation monies going predominantly into the classroom, into student programming, into school programming. So we certainly are looking forward to that. And I think what you saw at the last governing board meeting, I just think is a glimpse of the complexity, the passion, the culture, and some of the local politics around desegregation monies itself. You would think that simply shifting money from administrative positions into the classroom for teaching positions that are predominantly serving African-American, Native American, and Latino students in terms of helping them get back on grade level with reading, writing, and math and increasing their outcomes on the state assessment, you would think that that could be something that would be universally supported. Not so, because of the complexities of this case. So I think it's sort of a view of what's to come when a Ninth Circuit victory happens. I don't think it's going to be as easy as just five governing board members shifting massive amounts of dollars into the classroom. So we do know that that process is going to have to be transparent. It's going to have to be inclusive. It's going to have to be inclusive of all segments of the TUSD community, so that that road could be as smooth as it can possibly be, so we don't see passions erupting like we did at the last governing board meeting. And we've got to do a better job with that as an administration.
Absolutely. We've got about one more minute left. So you talked just there in your answer about moving more of the funding to classroom success.
Yes.
So can you talk about a little bit of your focus, not only for those folks under that have been benefiting from the DSEG order specifically, but admin to classroom, how does that happen?
Well, number one, we have to make a couple of different shifts, right? So we know that there are aspects of the desegregation order that ultimately made TUSD a better school district. I think everybody can get behind supporting magnet programming on the ground, providing more transportation for more students to take advantage of our magnet programming, providing more student support services inside of our schools. We have these positions that are paid out of desegregation called student success specialists that actually get on the ground and mentor students engaged in absenteeism. So that's really what it looks like. And then ultimately supporting these reading and math intervention positions that are working with our minimally proficient students.
Thank you, Dr. Trejo. We appreciate that. I'm with Dr. Trejo, TUSD Superintendent, and Shelley Watson. And when we get back on the other side of the break, we will go into legislative issues, ESAs, Prop 123, and you'll hear more from Shelley on that side for sure. Again, you're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour on KVOI 1030 The Voice. Good morning again, and welcome back to Jump in Tucson and the Engagement Hour. Again, I've got Dr. Gabe Trujillo with me for another half hour, TUSD Superintendent, as well as Shelley Watson, the CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. Well, we're going to go into a little bit more of the politics side. We always seem to get back there. I mean, even Grant Krueger, and his, who is the Jump in Wednesday host, he ends up more on politics than on food. So it's, you know, we've got to at least touch on it then at a minimum. So let's talk a little bit about the governor's position. We've heard the governor just was down here last week for her state report. And now we're listening to what's moving forward on the legislature. All the bills have been dropped. I think somewhere over 1,300 bills have been dropped, maybe even more than that. And a couple hundred will make it into law. But some of the big things out there, Shelley, what SALC establishes legislative priorities. Since we're focused on education, can you kind of give our listeners a little bit of what that organization's priorities for this legislative session, as well as Education Forward Arizona? You might want to talk a little bit about that board you're on as well.
Sure, Ted. It is amazing how education does become very political. We wouldn't think it should be, but it definitely does. There's a couple of things this session. There, I mean, there's so many things happening in the education space, but there's a couple of things at SALC that we're focused on and our members care about this particular session. The first one is sort of wonky. Some of our listeners may know about the aggregate expenditure limitation, and it's a formula that was set back in 1980. It's very, it's old, basically. It doesn't take into account what it costs to educate a student today and sort of some of the technological advances and costs around those. Over the past couple of years, legislators have used the AEL as kind of a little bit of a tool and as a compromise, and we've kicked the can down the road and given temporary solutions in each of the last couple of sessions. We're advocating for a permanent solution to the AEL. We've got to update the funding formula so that, honestly, what it boils down to is that so that districts, Dr. Trujillo and others in his field, can spend the money that the legislature allocates for them, because they bump up against this ceiling every year with this AEL limitation.
And that's a great point. And I know Dr. Trujillo has talked about it before. When you're waiting to find out if you're going to get your full allocation till later during the school year, it's hard for you to spend and budget and plan. I mean, like a couple of years ago, we were facing a shutdown, but people forget that getting the exception to the AEL through the legislature just allows them to spend what the legislature had already authorized them to spend in their budget. So I agree. I think that would be a great one if we could get a permanent fix to that solution going forward, instead of making it an annual argument at the state.
That's right. And there's advantages for legislators to do that, though, and have an annual argument. They use it as leverage sometimes, but we will continue to push for that at SALC. You mentioned I'm on the board of Education Forward Arizona. That organization also is seeking a permanent solution to the AEL formula as well. So we're kind of in tandem there. Another issue that we're looking at this session, as are many, is the empowerment scholarship accounts, or vouchers, as they're commonly known. There's been a lot of rhetoric around those. We're at SALC. We believe in school choice. We believe parents and guardians should have the opportunity to send their children where they think it's best, where they can get the best education. And in the past, there have been vouchers available for students in certain categories. For example, if they're at a D or an F school, if they had a sibling that was already, availing one of the vouchers, they could go to that same school. If they were, in foster system or disability, things like that. But as we know, a couple of years ago, the legislature opened it up to universal vouchers, universal ESAs for all families. And currently we've got, I just looked at the ADE website, there's just over 74,000 Arizonans that have taken advantage of an ESA to date. And that's probably higher than projections were. And over 50,000 of those families who've taken advantage of that are under the universal category. They're not in one of those special categories that I mentioned before. So while we believe in choice at SALC, We believe that there needs to be accountability and transparency around these ESAs. We don't know necessarily what they're funding. We don't know, and not only the accountability and transparency around the funding, but assessments. We don't know how children are testing in the different schools that they're going to. And we feel like there should be a level playing field. Choice is great. Let's make sure all the choices are good ones and that we're comparing apples and apples. And that's sort of where SALC stands on those.
Yeah, Dr. Trejo, we've talked about ESAs in the past. What are your thoughts on both, I guess, SALC's position about looking for transparency and accountability, but also what the future of ESA should look like?
Well, right now, ESAs in their current iteration, right now, I don't think you can say truly that they are an equitable option in terms of school choice. Because number one, you have the predominant majority of students that are on ESAs, at least inside of TUSD's 230 square mile boundary. The predominant majority of young people that live inside of our boundary taking an ESA have never stepped foot in a TUSD school. Okay, so they've always gone the private route. It's just a price reduction for them. It's a cost reduction. So the argument could be said that they're actually taking an ESA away from a student that probably could use it, at least economically, would need it a little bit more. I think ESAs siphon off dollars from the traditional public school district, pump dollars into an already well-funded private system without the accountability. And I think Shelley touched on what our position is we don't have a problem with school choice. Actually, school choice makes TUSD a better school district. And parents should have that choice. We benefit from school choice. When you look at the thousands of families that actually come in to some of our more iconic programs like University High School and Tucson High and our arts programs and our CTE programs, we have a lot of families opting into TUSD. So school choice is a beautiful thing. We like school choice. We just want to make sure that whatever system that we're competing against is subjected to the same amount of scrutiny, regulation, and oversight that we are. And we don't have that right now with the ESA system.
And that brings up a point for consideration as one is the scrutiny for the public education system too high, or is the scrutiny for those who are using public dollars? Remember, I mean, we're talking ESAs ultimately are public dollars coming out of the state coffers. Because I personally don't have a problem with them using those vouchers to go to private schools. And we can have much longer argument on whether they've stepped on, you know, a public school account campus or not, if they should be eligible. But the real issue to me is if we are putting requirements on TUSD, on Amphi, on Catalina Foothills, both for the transparency and the accountability, why don't we have that throughout the system?
Sure.
And I don't think it's too much to ask if we require some of those schools to show what success rates. I mean, there's a lot of those private schools that folks are going to are extremely successful. So those schools, I don't think, are going to be hesitant.
Right.
The question is, what about the other ones and the other avenues?
Well, and I think some of the folks who are against ESAs will talk about the waste, the fraud, and the abuse that goes on with that system. And we have seen that. We've seen some incidences of that. I think we can all agree that in any large bureaucratic system, i.e., a school district, there's going to be some waste, some fraud, and some abuse. So I think there's some of that to go around. But I think our members at SALC, TED, would agree with your statement that if there's public funding of something, there does need to be some accountability and scrutiny to the taxpayer for that that good. And so I think that's sort of what our position is and what we're arguing for.
So Supervisor Trejo, one question. Sorry, Superintendent.
Yeah.
I don't want to put you on the Board of Supervisors unless you really want, if you really want to have that
much
fun.
I have my hands full at TUSD.
Oh, all right. So one of the things Shelley had mentioned earlier about the DNF schools being
sure.
eligible, well, the school grades in TUSD have significantly improved. And so that kind of, I won't say is eliminated, but it's a sign that things are turning in the right direction for you. If there was one oversight or transparency rule that you think is beyond necessity, what would that be that you'd like to see the legislature eliminate that you're required to do?
Instructional minutes and instructional calendar requirements. I think if we're going to be truly innovative, and I think if we're going to be competitive in this open enrollment space, number one. Two, if we are truly going to offer the kind of learning experiences and rigor that this generation of student responds to, we need to have the restraints of the instructional minutes, the restraints of the instructional calendar. They need to be either removed or dramatically more flexible. The days of the 1955 classroom based on the Carnegie unit, those days are gone in terms of how to inspire today's young person. They don't respond to sitting in rows anymore, staring at a blackboard. And you can't put them all in a box and say they're all going to learn this content in exactly 50 minutes and 6 50-minute periods across 5 school days, and they're going to do it all in a 9-week quarter. We have to be able to meet the learner where they are at right now. We have to create the kind of learning experiences that involves a lot of technology usage, that involves a lot of project-based learning work that these students love to engage in, that involves a lot of collaborative opportunities that don't necessarily always have to take place in a brick-and-mortar space. And we just don't have that kind of flexibility right now. A lot of the smaller charters and privates get away with that. We don't. And I think that truly, if we could unlock that door, we could be significantly more innovative and creative and ultimately competitive.
Well, I think that's a concept that I was unaware of that would be a major concern to you, but it makes sense because you're right. One of the things that aren't attractive to both the private school system as well as the charter system is that creativeness of education. And there are charters that have completely different formats of how to teach the children. That's where parents should have the opportunity of saying, where does my child learn best? And at a school district your size particularly, you need that flexibility to be able to offer, even within the district,
we do
different formats.
We do.
And that would make a huge change. I'm going to take a couple more minutes before we go to our break, because I just want to get both of your thoughts real quick on Prop 123. For those who don't understand, Prop 123 is the citizen approved initiative that it was put forward by Governor Ducey under his watch, and Governor Hobbs has made it clear that it's one of her priorities to get approved going forward, where it takes funding off of the state land trust, some of the proceeds, and puts it into education. Mm-hmm. We've seen a common thread right now, and that is that both Republicans and Democrats this year want it to go forward, difference in the amounts of money they want to pull, but they both want to support teacher raises. However, the governors made it more holistic to include others who are involved in the classroom. And I'd just like to get your thoughts on Prop 123 and what you think would be the best way to get voter approval from this point.
Yeah, that's a great point, Ted. And I think what you said is so important, that at least both sides of the aisle are right now talking about pumping more money into teacher salaries. That's something we can celebrate for sure. The governor wants to take a larger percentage from the state land trust and to include, as you mentioned, some support staff in schools as well, which has been a bone of contention. On the Republican side of the aisle, some bills are being put forward that would really just focus on teacher raises and bringing the average up quite a bit, $4,000 or $5,000 per teacher, and kind of leave it up to the districts more how they would help support other support staff and provide extra monies for them. Again, from our perspective, the great conversation is that we're talking about putting more money into the system. I think, and Dr. Trujillo would probably agree that I think that what the governor is saying is helpful. It's probably DOA with the current legislature. So it'll be interesting to see what ultimately gets referred, because that's what we're talking about, the legislature referring something to the ballot. And it'll be interesting to see what that language actually is, because I think there is an appetite among voters to support increased money for teacher pay.
Yeah, so the educator in me obviously is very passionate about the entire ecosystem around the classroom teacher. The teacher is the center of the work. The teacher is the engine of the educational experience and ultimately the influence of that experience on a child. But we all know, obviously, that there's an ecosystem that that supports that work. There's a custodian that makes sure that the campus is clean and the classroom space is clean and clear and safe. There's a counselor that works with students at crucial moments in their academic lives and when they encounter socio-emotional issues. We have bus drivers that get kids to school. We all know that. However, if we're going before the electorate in a general election situation, what resonates most with John Q. voter is the power and the influence of the classroom teacher. And I think you got to go with that, because ultimately, as passionate as I am around the ecosystem and supporting all these positions, I want to win. We know that our teachers need to get paid. We can't have everything, but if I can have one thing, let us pay our teachers.
Winning is important.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Dr. Trujillo. And spoken as I am, we're both proud members, proud board members of Tucson Values Teachers. And so that's something that our organization is working to support.
All right, everybody. We've had the legislator discussion. When we come back, we'll talk about how people can get involved, about what they feel needs to happen at our schools and how they can help. So you're listening to KVOI, The Voice, Jump in Tucson, and the Engagement Hour. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. We've got Dr. Gabe Trujillo, the TUSD superintendent, and Shelley Watson, the CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, with us. Shelley, this last moment, we're going to focus on how people can get involved. And you are incredibly involved. Education Forward Arizona, TVT, multiple other education-based entities that you engage with on a, if not a daily basis, pretty close to that. How do you see folks being able to get involved in maybe the policy side of trying to change education rules and regulations?
Well, I think this might be a little bit different than what you had in mind, Ted, but I think that people really need to start focusing in their own homes. It all starts in your own homes as parents and guardians of kids. People need to be a little bit more strategic. It's gone are the days when you can send your kid off to school, just hope for the best, and you know, think that everything's going to be okay and they're going to get a great job and have a happy life. They have to help children and students understand that what their interests are going to contribute to their future, and be strategic about what the needs in our current society are. For example, there are huge needs right now in the healthcare field, and that ranges from all sorts of different jobs that can be a part of the healthcare field. But if a child has any kind of an interest in that, it is worth helping them pursue that. And there's so many ways that they can do that. There's so many opportunities that are available to students. Look no further than Pima JTED. If you have not been on the Pima JTED website recently, I encourage you to do that, because if a child has an interest in veterinary tech or culinary arts or welding or computer-aided design, they can do any of that. And so basically, parents and guardians need to be good consumers and help their students understand the opportunities that are available to them out there. And I would encourage people to get involved that way.
Outstanding. And Dr. Trujillo, I'm going to give you the last minute. A lot of times people think they've got to run for the school board to change how their district works and impact education in the region. What other ways can people get involved and make TUSD a better district?
Actually, if you're a parent and you're listening to this, it's not about the school board race. It's about your local school. Join any leadership council. There's a lot of different committees at your local school. Get involved. Local decision-making works. Whether it's the school site council or the school's next principal selection committee, you have opportunities there. Secondly, volunteer, volunteer, volunteer. We're always looking for parents and volunteers to read to kids, to come on in and help us monitor playgrounds, to help us out at release, arrival, and departure time. So we need you.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us today. There has been a lot of opportunities discussed with how you can jump in and get engaged in this community. Start tomorrow by waking up and joining Christy Simone on Wake Up Tucson. And then staying on board for Jump in Tucson with Grant Kruger. You've been listening to KVOI 1030 The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. Everybody have a great day.